records or previous medical.
Blasting out on the airwaves of the desert southwest on 94.3 FM KRVL in Tucson. I'm Eddie Middleton in Memphis, Tennessee. My co-host tonight is Colleen Johnston in North Carolina. And we've got Kent Stedman back on. He's been off there with us here for a couple of months, and he's back. He's the author of the cyberspaceorbit.com website, and it's always just absolutely breathtaking information he has to share with us tonight. Kent, thanks for being back on. We really miss you being on Night Search, and hope you're going to be able to be back on a regular basis again now.
I'm sure glad to be back.
Yeah, we're glad to have you back, Kent.
I've
really
been
down
for a while, but I think I'm okay now.
Boy, oh boy, a lot's been going on out there.
Get that website going, and gosh, I just want you to start to share some updates with us here tonight. You want to start with maybe the first thing that comes to mind we were talking about before we went on the air tonight?
Well, let's see. When I'm doing this website, let me explain to everybody out there that what I do is I'm kind of a Fortean type of dude. Now, that means there used to be this guy named Charles Fort that would collect strange events and anomalous objects and odd happenings, and then he sort of do what I do. I go out and fetch them like an old hound dog, and I drag them back to the front door and hope that somebody can explain it. So many times I find myself with a lot more questions than I have answers.
Fine.
I do it in teaching philosophy also.
Well, let's see here. One of the strange things we've seen over this last week, we really don't have an answer for it. This is a challenge to anybody with it. Astrophysics background out there. We saw on the 14th a feller named Jeff from Houston wrote me an email and said, hey, I've been watching the SOHO LASCO data through the now the SOHO telescope is out a million miles away from Earth, trained on the sun with several cameras
watching
the event from the sun, and one of these cameras masks out the central part of the sun so that you can see, so that it doesn't get blinded. It can see things in the near vicinity in what you call the corona of the sun. And we've seen a lot of strange things, things that will appear and disappear. Sometimes they look like a reflective objects, but they only last a frame or two, and then zap, they're gone. Other times we've seen bizarre-looking, energetic, plasma type of patterns. Really an assortment of bizarre happenings around the sun. Of course, the sun is a mysterious mysterious body, and I'm not sure, even the astronomers, I think, will say they're not actually sure what it is.
Oh, right. Boy.
seems like every civilization will call it the way they screen it, you know. In the old days, in the ancient times, they considered it a deity. And then during the industrial age, they said it was a big ball of fire. And during the thermonuclear age, they call it something like a thermonuclear exchange engine.
I say it's a blazing mystery in broad daylight.
Well, anyway, we thought there are times when planets will cross the sun, and you can see them quite clearly, and they're predicted. We know when they're coming, and it's on the way they're imaged. The image is enhanced through a CCD mechanism, they call it, and they have these big spreading wings, and you can see Mercury fly by and Venus fly by. But during, on the 914, there were no planets anywhere near, but we saw an object about two-thirds out of the way from the center of the sun, moving in the opposite direction of the star field. Now, all the stars will go from left to right, see, and it's sort of like ducks in formation. They all maintain parallel courses because they're way out there. But what we saw was a peculiar object that was moving in opposition to the planetary field, and it, we watched it for a day, and it was really strange, like the star got arrived, you know. And then in a day's time, it drifted the aperture of the SOHO cameras. And so we sent out quite an inquiry on the internet to try and find out what the heck it was. And where we stand now, we don't know what it was. So how's that
happen? Is there like a, is there a potential like solar flare warning?
Well, this is an object. This is an object that went frame by frame by frame by frame off in animation, off the off through the SOHO field, and then off the edge. And there were two asteroids that were what we call NEOs, near Earth objects. One was asteroid 2000 RG 53. The other was 2000 QW7. Now, RG 53 did pass within about, it came in and passed within about 2.5 million miles.
That's pretty close.
Now, yeah, the astronomers say that's close. These ones aren't close to me, but they say that's close. And also, Comet Encke was up there. Mysterious Comet Encke. You like that name?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of something Jimmy Durante used to say there, kind of Encke Dinky Doo or something.
Comet Encke, huh?
Well, you've heard of Enlow and Encke?
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah, of course, yeah, right. I don't know why they didn't ring that bell with Zacharias Hitchin. Yeah, he was the expert on genetic manipulation, right?
Enlow was an ancient Sumerian mythological being that some people like Zacharias Hitchin say came to this world from another place, either in space or time, and Encke was the sort of a starship commander, and his alleged son, Enlil, came to Earth and manipulated the people of the Earth to mess around with their DNA and so on. And biblically speaking, created a race of giants, etc., etc., the people that lived east of Eden, the Nephilim.
Yeah.
So that's the mythology behind that, but the actual comet Encke is a strange cat. It's actually probably a whole flotilla of various shaped rocks and debris passing that passes periodically near the sun.
Yeah.
Now, what we saw didn't have a tail, and it moved too fast for a comet. Comets usually just sort of hang there in orbit, you know.
Yeah.
Right. When it came, it took 2 or 3 days to move across the same field that we watched this object come sipping in a day. Meanwhile,
what about the little pebble? Now, he'd had some pretty dire forecast for the month of September, early fall, you know.
Well, a couple of things have happened. It seemed like during this time that we were watching this object, it almost seemed like NASA was testing us by telling us about these other near-Earth objects, which they don't always do.
Right.
It's almost like they were testing the waters to see how, you know, who was out there that was watching to handle these things. And then all of a sudden the British press came out with an alarming statement. They said that they're something to the effect that their economy is most seriously threatened in the near future by asteroids.
Really?
My goodness, why are we not shocked at that?
Their economy is seriously threatened in the near future by asteroids.
Yeah, it's all across the internet.
Yeah, I've seen some of that.
The British government said that now? Who said it?
Yeah, the British government. People worried about the economy said it.
Oh.
Well, anyway, in tracking this down, some more of the conservatives, actually, astronomers, people that hang out in various boards on the internet, like the Comet and Asteroid Board, found out that there is an asteroid called 1998, I think, if I could adjust my glasses here, OX4. It's having some real statistical possibility, probability of impacting the Earth this century.
Yeah.
century?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Which century are we in now?
Less
than a year left in the present century, right?
Well, that depends which calendar you go by.
Right.
Some feel that...
which calendar are they going by?
Yeah,
now?
Right. I want to know the answer to that question, man.
Well, it's a 300 to 400. I'm reading off my internet site. By the way, to fill in the gaps with what I'm saying here, and I don't always, I'm getting old. Forgetful sometimes, so I read off my own internet site.
You got that old disease, don't you?
Cyberspaceorbit.com, and it's been, all this stuff is illustrated. If you want to see this object, you don't have to just picture it in your mind. You can go up to the website and take a gander at it. Because we caught it on animation going across the...
And I want to caution our listeners out there that the Orbit website is absolutely addictive. You know, and we're not responsible for your late night cruising the Orbit website problems.
Well,
if that's true, you've got such extensive information on there.
If it's addictive to them, you can see what big trouble I'm in. I went on the internet to publish a children's story.
Well, this is kind of a children's book. You know, your website is.
A tale, indeed.
It's helping to wake a lot of the children of Earth up to the fact that we do have a lot of anomalies going on out there.
Yeah.
The anomaly, this anomalous anomaly has actually got a name. It's the one that they're really targeting now that's scaring the pants off the British. It's called 1998. OX4, it's a 300 to 400 meter wide asteroid predicted by NASA and other authorities, I'm reading now, to be on a collision course with Earth
this century.
And not a word in the media about it.
Oh my goodness.
And in just, maybe 2006, from 2003 to 2006.
Right.
Oh.
That's pretty scary.
It will be back around in 2002, hey, that's pretty soon, isn't it? 2004 and 2006. Mm-hmm. And it made this year's close path to the Earth on September 20th. I'll be darned.
And that kind of fits in with...
I didn't even notice that part.
With the, what's his name, the guy in Australia's predictions, William Cam, what's his name? That said, the little pebble that was...
Right.
He had the forecast for early fall, maybe in September, we might get a cometary impact or an asteroid or...
Or dust or something, some sort of flyby.
Hey, well, I just noticed something. I should read, sometimes I go to publishing things on the website, making my links, and I don't get really a chance to read them all because stuff comes in, But this was close past the Earth on September 20th, 2000, as we saw this object on the Soho field of view, out on the 14th.
How close a pass, then, to the Earth?
It doesn't say. We don't know how close it came this time around, but they're looking at us as an impact object,
Yeah, reading from your website, it says be anywhere from a large sub-global event. That's scary, to a low global effect threshold event.
Okay.
Whatever that means, it could leave an impact crater 6 to 8 wide. Now
wait, how across, the crater?
Right.
Is that a mile across?
About that, uh-huh, a little over.
And you're talking about this could leave a crater 6 to 8 miles approximately.
Approximately. It said here it can be expected to kill, on average, somewhere between 500,000 and 1.5 billion people.
Really?
It would totally destroy an area the size of Delaware. And the release of energy would be the equivalent of to 100,000 hydrogen bombs. Whoa.
But
now that's spooky.
But it wouldn't necessarily kill off everybody on the planet.
Well, that's just the impact.
Just the impact, yeah.
That's not the, like, nuclear winter and the stuff that would follow after an asteroid of that size hitting the Earth.
This would be the absolute finish of us all, really, then.
Well, it would kick up a lot of dust, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would.
Blot out the sun for 500 years, something like that.
Right. Now, that's real bad on crops.
Oh, boy. And it could disrupt the British economy, too, yeah.
Yeah, it'd mess it up.
Yeah, and they're really planning on it, messing it up. It would mess up the world economy, you know. And,
They're comparing. I mean, they're in their official reports. And by the way, if you click through a few links here, a few sites, they do have the actual, for those of you that would like to partake, they have the actual British government report in the PDF file. Let's see, what's that? That's Adobe Acrobat. You have to have Adobe.
Well, I'd like to get that report on our website, or link to it.
Yeah, definitely. We'll put up a link on our front page to this report. I think it's, absolutely
detrimental
to have it up for people to see.
Scuttlebutt behind the scenes now. See, they tossed out these two recent near-Earth objects for us to look at. Scratch our heads about and worry about. In this report, the scuttlebutt behind the scenes, now are they tossing us another one out, for us? Are they trying to psychologically prepare us for something that may or may not be even more imminent?
Right. Because they really don't know.
That's pretty imminent, but with something even more imminent than 2003, maybe, huh?
That's pretty imminent.
I mean, they don't even know half of what's, a small fraction of what's up there. And when the asteroid belt in conjunction where it lies around and, where it lies with Earth, we look truly like we're just cramped in this little space. When you see a map of it in the chart, and it really makes you wonder because there's so many objects out there, aren't there, Kent? They can break free for whatever reason, bump into each other and, bump off each other and start another orbit.
Well, we've seen two very strange events, in recent times. In the last month, we saw a comet Linear S4, which is a sort of new comet, making its appearance in the solar system. And to the amazement of everybody watching it, including the hardcore astrophysicists, it kind of broke up. Like it hit a wall or something and busted up with a bunch of little pieces. Left a nice little package in orbit, and that orbit is sort of the Earth's orbit.
Oh. Goodness.
So when I saw that happen, my first instinct, and that's all it is, folks, is an instinct, is that we've suddenly got an awful lot of debris out there that we didn't have before.
You were just talking before the show about an asteroid that blazed through the night skies there from Phoenix to the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. That's another leg of this story, folks. And that's that, let me go back to my report. I guess it was the night before last or the night before that. There was a considerable blazing event that went from Phoenix to L.A., and instead of calling it a meteorite, the astrophysicists call it a possible chunk of an asteroid. Now, we've all seen these little Pendleton Tinkerbell-type meteors go by, but this is being called something much more substantial, a rock, an asteroid, something that's breath. And it was seen, my side is getting blocky here.
Your side is mind-boggling. I'm on it too right now, and just mind-boggling. You just feel like every bit of space you hit, don't you?
Yeah. Mysterious flash across California's sky may have been an asteroid ship. The report was on the 27th. And about 8 p.m. Tuesday. So now I have to count back to figure out which date that was. Last Tuesday, I guess. So it's a considerable event. So again, it brings up the puzzle here, you know, is are there suddenly a lot of chunks of stuff
right
up around the sun?
Right. Because, you know, you brought that to even NASA's attention, and if you tell our listeners out there that haven't heard you state this before, that you actually got a response back from NASA. And
that response was? Well, I got a response. NASA, they were really quite agreeable to some of the anomalies we've been seeing up there. Now, this recent event that I've just been talking about was not of the same order in that it was a definite object that moved frame by frame by frame. We watched it over a day. But at the same time, we get other anomalous events that look like they're things that reflect light, but they'll appear for only a frame or two, you know. Well, NASA said that the rule of thumb here is if the object, because of the depth of field of the SOHO cameras, if you see something that's kind of hazy and funny looking and fluidy, it could be associated with the actual spacecraft itself. But because of the way the cameras are focused, if you see something with sharp, refined edges, then it's easy as to what these things are. And we see they've been popping with Edwards of I Wonder Productions. And so it's sort of a puppet. The fact is that the thing is just sort of a disappeared. And some of them are sizable. If you'll go to my site, clip through to the front page, you'll see two or three objects. One zipped across the entire SOHO frame, looking like it left a tail. But yet it was only on one frame. Another one looks like a Starship Enterprise with little spaceships coming off the left end of it. And another is a curved form. For those of you that can't access the internet, it looks like, what does it look like? It looks like a rope blowing in the wind. It was up at the top of the SOHO, or the top of the SOHO image. So if it's an object, it's changing course dramatically over a relatively short astronomical distance. So on a daily basis, we do see things that even NASA is watching very closely. They don't know what they are, so we just call it what we want to call it.
Exactly. I mean, what else can you do? We wouldn't have known, you know, that any of that stuff was out there without SOHO being up.
I've been amazed at some of the things I've seen. I would just invite, rather than listen to my banter here, for people to go access the SOHO Alaska website, and they do keep frames. They offer up to us a frame about every 15 minutes usually, so you can, and there are different cameras. Some zoom in quite close to the sun and look at the surface of the sun. Others watch the corona with a mask over the sun so you can see what's happening in the perimeter.
Kent, we've come to the bottom of the hour, so we're going to go ahead and take our break right now. Guys, stay tuned, because we have so much more to cover this evening with Kent Stedman. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Night Search on KRVL 94.3 FM from Tucson. Stay tuned.
And Colleen up in North Carolina, Colleen Johnson, and we're talking to Kent Stedman, who has the amazing cyberspaceorbit.com website. And as always, he's proving that there's more things in heaven and earth than dreamt of in our philosophy. Kent, thanks for being on with us tonight. And
thanks, Kent.
Going to the break, we were talking about, you said, well, the sun was starting to get real feisty right now, that we're at the peak of the solar cycle.
We're at the peak of the solar cycle, and from what I gather, it's not going to suddenly just poop out, you know, fizzle out. We're going to see it. We're going to see it being pretty feisty for a couple of years, even. sometimes it's bizarre, though. It's really hard to predict old Saul, old man Saul. One event that we've been watching, if you go to my site, it says potential major solar flare warning, potential naked eye sunspot observation.
Oh.
Sometimes sunspots get so vast and big that you can actually see them with the naked eye, but be careful, don't just go out and
stare at the sun.
Yeah.
It's advisable.
Spots, sure enough.
It's advisable that you only use, you don't do it with your naked eyes because you don't want to go blind. So there are ways that you can look at the sun without harming your retina.
Yeah, could you tell our listening audience of how they can do that, Kent, or some recommendations if people want to observe the sun like that with their naked eye?
Don't do it.
Okay.
That's all I can say. I don't know. I'm no expert on that. Go out and put it, stack up 10 pairs of sunglasses, get some welding glasses, I don't know. But the best thing is probably to just, you don't have to go look at the sun. You can go to the SOHO Alaska website and see this immense sunspot. It's going off the right now. It's already moved across the solar phase. It's a really unusual sunspot in that it's the biggest one they've seen in this cycle, and probably the biggest sunspot since, I think they said, 1942.
Yes, exactly. Now that's exactly
this sunspot group measures 6.51 billion square kilometers in size. That is large enough to map the entire surface area of the Earth within the space occupied by the sunspot complex almost 13 times over.
That's a big sunspot.
Well, here's the interesting thing about it. When this thing first started to dawn on the left-hand side of the SOHO image, they began to say what they call it an alpha, beta, gamma sunspot, which means, to me, it means look out. It's a very dynamic, turbulent, a lot of magnetic fields around it that it could really toss a major flare at us. In fact, they were predicting an X10 flare.
They're still pretty much holding to that, too, aren't they? With this.
Well, the thing is, it hasn't done it. It has been real quiet. Here's this alpha, beta, gamma sunspot going across the face of the sun. And it's another unusual thing about it is it's called an equatorial sunspot. Most of the sunspots you see because of the dynamics of the sun are either 30 degrees north or 30 degrees south. This was right, hovering right dead center on the equator of the sun. Had it back into the 24th, Earth would have really taken a terrible shock. And some, you know, there are those that theorize, and I don't know.
Why?
There are those that theorize that, you know, such an impact from, say, an X10, X15 flare. Now, an X-class flare is the largest category.
Right.
But then you step up, X1, X2, up to X10. And you're talking about an impact to the Earth that might be a bit unprecedented, and we don't know what it is.
And what would, you know, a normal, let's say, X10 for our listeners out there, what would that produce?
An X10?
Yeah.
I haven't got the slightest idea. I thought
it would be normal, actually, for us.
Or a normal, like, a normal X-class flare, rather.
Well, the last X-flare, if you can click back a few pages, on my site, back to the July period, you'll see we had a really powerful central X-class flare that exploded right when it was like a big eye looking right at Earth, and boy, was that a wild sight to watch. The first thing that happened is all the looking into the SOHO telescope, everything turned into an impressionist painting. The sun disappeared, and all there was all these little fireflies dancing everywhere. And it hit the Earth's magnetosphere with a considerable impact. And what that does, it actually nerfs ball within its environment, and it will actually compress the understand it, it's sort of like Scotty on the Starship Enterprise is saying, shields down, buckos, you know, because Earth has lost its natural gravitational protection.
Fine. I always laugh when I get nervous.
John, X-10, how bad could that be? I mean, what could be some likely consequences of that hitting the Earth?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. In my watch of the year or so ago, I saw the depolar satellites take a picture of a solar impact, and it actually showed some of the Earth's atmosphere. I think it was around Christmas time last year, or a year before, I don't recall. So part of the Earth's atmosphere actually leaking out into space, goodbye, gone forever.
Wow.
So it compressed the Earth so much that it bulged out of the pole in the actually blue atmosphere.
And that would have been maybe a fairly sizable chunk of the atmosphere?
I guess so.
No.
Okay, well, a couple other things. The thing, you know what amazes me about this sunspot, though, is that it hasn't really blown. I mean, it's a really big, centrally located, biggest since 92, and it has not produced a significant flare.
I mean, for people that can't see it, like you said, if you can envision, you know, 13 volts, you know, that's massive. We just can't even count that really in our mind.
Well, that's a mystery,
We have a friend. Can I tell a little bit of a wild story? Now, this is where the artist...
Don't get too wild for us now.
Well, this is the artist.
It's quite all right, Ken. You're permitted.
You've had a guest here on the show that a lot of people are watching and have been part of scientific experiments involving humans. The capacity of the human being to reach out spiritually and to affect things. And his name is Shu.
Yes.
When this sunspot first came around, I said, Shu, what are we going to do about this? Shu said, well, said I'll work on it.
And I bet that has been.
It's not really a laughing matter. I've watched Shu, and there's a lot of really serious people including Nancy Talbot and another doctor whose name I
can't. Living Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Living Good, yeah.
They have the potential to produce a kind of exactly what to call
it. That's a good term for it, I think.
Outline. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it gives me great hope, and I'm really, I have great admiration for Shu.
Oh, me too. We're having him back on the show, matter of fact, in November.
Yeah, when he says he's on guard about something, I no longer chuckle that much about it because I've seen him quell things. Quell things. And so I'll just toss that out to your audience. If you're not acquainted with Shu and the experimentation that's gone on around him, you know, he's a fellow that has some really interesting abilities, you know. But some of us have interesting abilities. You know? We're not all the same. We all have talent.
We've witnessed many times that talent within him that has just truly, truly astounded me over and over again. You know, when we should have something hit the Earth and it, like, it parts and goes around the Earth, you know, you wonder, and, you know, I've talked to Ed Edwards and said, gosh, you know, what happened? What'd you do? He said, oh, I've been working. You know how laid back he is.
Well, one of the reasons why I take it seriously is because I've had strands, and I'm sure other people have. I mean, face it, we're not what we are scientifically always identified to be in terms of family, protoplasm, you know.
Right.
And I've had my own experiences throughout my history that were really powerful and really dramatic, and I'm convinced from my own experiences that if somehow I knew how to lasso those moments, you know, a bit, call it what you want, break, Where you feel like you actually are able to get beyond the human condition and perceive and experience other events. And I've always felt that if I could somehow tame that ability in myself, that it would really be remarkable. Well, so it's no great surprise to me if she says, well, I'm going to concentrate on that big sunspot up there.
It's just unbelievable what's happening right now. You know,
and I'm really grateful that we have this type of format in this show where we can talk about things like this, because I think they need to be talked about.
Well, people need to be aware. They need to know that there's more happening outside of, you know, their lives than what people really understand. And if we can help enlighten people, then we're doing a good service.
Sometimes the mass media, like the movies, will make a movie that there's partial truth in. What was that with John Travolta? Phenomenon?
Yes. Yeah. And that was the movie that was famous.
You know,
we need to start with that respect. One faced with an asteroid incoming, or one faced with being shocked by a powerful bolt from the sun. So many of us say, oh, well, nothing we can do about it. Well, who knows what we can do about it? The human mind and the electromagnetic field around us doesn't stop over there 2 feet away from us. You know, we're not only flesh and blood, which we are at one level, but we also project out around us brain waves, you know. And those, that electromagnetic field around us, that plasma, which might go from pure electromagnetic, it might be various stages like plasma, electromagnetic energy, then call it what you want, pure spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It goes out forever and ever and ever. And even our quantum scientists now are talking about non-locality and how an event over here might be able to affect something out in infinite space, you know, beyond what we call the tickety-tock of linear time.
And so we don't know that potential, that human potential of what lies in the brain, how much we can use of it, and how we can use it. We really don't know much. You know, we know that it's the brain has a nervous system that runs through it, and it controls different thoughts and things in our mind, but we don't know really the potential of it. I feel that you is one of those people that truly exhibits that potential. You know, and there are others like him.
And
he knows
it's
not alone.
If he can do it, you know, maybe the possibility is that we can exercise a talent, maybe not quite like his.
Right. But if we can all get focused, maybe we can stop something from happening.
I've always been a dreamer. When I was a little kid, they told me, well, that's kind of crazy to be dreaming so much. So I went into the arts, you know, it's the only comfortable place I could find to feel free to dream. And there are times in my imaginative experience, in my Jungian imagination, where I feel that I can touch distant worlds or at least get out of Seattle for a split second and see something that's beyond me and beyond the world. And that brings up another subject. Sometimes it comes down and bonks us on the head. There's an image that came from the Mars Surveyor collection. They call it the Mars MOC. There's a big spacecraft now mapping and orbiting around Mars. It's called the Surveyor. And it's sending back a clearer image than we've ever had before. Well, I'll tell you, there's an image that came back. It's called MO102828. Somebody sent it in to me, and I had not the slightest idea. He found it in the thousands of images. But there is a sort of glyphic formation on Mars that looks like, well, okay, it looks like writing.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Folks, you got to go to the website. Give me out your website again so people can do it for those tuning in. It's
cyberspaceorbit.com. You'll be sure to go to Kent's website. You can also go to the NightSearch.net website. We have a link
to Ken's website.
Right.
In fact, on our menu page, you can go. We have the Cyberspace Orbit Sleuth, or Cyber Sleuth, what is it called, Colleen?
We have SoulWatch that's up, and it connects directly to Ken's main page of his website. So you can just go click down on that, too. But either way, you know, go look, because it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I tossed this up on the website, which I usually do. Hey, everybody, what do you think of this? And I got some interesting comments back. One fellow who I have a lot of, he's kind of a nameless source of information. I can't, he's anonymous. But he says he's very much into pyramidology and has actually either explored himself or he's in touch with people who explore him. He says this thing that we're seeing on Mars, which is actually gigantic. I mean, we're talking about massive formations. I guess the closest thing we'd have to it on Earth is the mysterious lines in the Nazca Plain of Peru.
Uh-huh.
But these glyphic formations, now there might be somebody come up with it, there most likely will be somebody come up with a more mundane explanation as to what this is, but for now,
Mars explanation.
For now, I'm enjoying the poetry of seeing this stuff. Anyway, this guy says that it's found in a well shaft. A very similar type of script is found in a well shaft near the second biggest pyramid in the Giza complex.
Okay.
Called a well near Khafre.
Oh.
So how's that for a Mars Egypt? Now, I've seen it. One of the most amazing books that I've read, many people read, is the book Dune by Frank Herbert.
Yeah.
When I first read that, my first impressions were, well, this book is impossible. I mean, the scope and depth is almost Shakespearean.
Oh.
He chose, of course, science fiction to write it, but he developed into various guilds and beings that lived on this ancient planet called Arrakis. He took it so far to actually develop writing for the guild and a writing for the, what he called the freemen, the desert wanderers. So I pulled up some of the fonts from Frank Herbert's glyph,
uh-huh.
I mean his fabrication of this language for the freemen, and it looks so similar to what I'm seeing on Mars. Now what's that all about?
Yeah, what did he know, really? Maybe.
Well, he was Navy, and I'm getting information that he might have been in the ops branch as an encoder decoder. So what was the Navy looking at?
Yeah.
Don't you think that a lot of the movie producers and people that write books like that are actually visionaries, and some of them don't know it?
They remote view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about science, I have to balance it with a real look at our great creator.
Right.
Because they discern and they proceed too, and they're not necessarily limited by the scientific methodology. Now, science is just a method, see, and it's a very important method, very important to our development. But it's not the only method.
Yeah.
And the great imaginative type of people sometimes, see, it's like this. We live possibly, science tells us we live in an infinite cosmos. So what that says to me is, well, let's dream then.
What was that quote from William Blake that was so good about God save me something from Voltaire or something in Newton's sleep? You know, the one I'm trying to recall. William Blake, the visionary poet in England in the Romantic.
Yeah, right. Blake was amazing. He did, you know, there are certain artists that have created so much work in their lifetime, you can't figure. Blake was one, Shakespeare was one, Mozart, Michelangelo. When you sit down and try to chalk up the hours that it would take to produce these great symphonies and these great immense sculptures and so on, it just doesn't compute in terms of the person's duration on the planet. Einstein said the important, I'm reading here, Einstein said the important thing is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. One cannot help but be in awe when he contemplates the mysteries of eternity, of life, of the marvelous structure of reality. It is enough if one tries merely to comprehend a little of this mystery every day. Never lose the holy curiosity.
Great quote. Yes.
Certainly is.
Well, on that note, we're getting close to the top of the hour here.
And we're going to do something different this next coming hour. Can I go ahead and announce it, Eddie?
Uh-huh, please. Uh-huh.
We are going to take callers to ask questions of Kent Stedman or Eddie Middleton or myself on these subjects that we're talking about tonight.
Or a comment,
Or a comment, whatever they want to talk about. And our telephone number is 1-520-740-0811. If you're in the Tucson area, it's just 740-0811. Outside of Tucson, it's 520-740-0811. We're looking forward to receiving calls anywhere on the internet, people listening or out there listening to us in Tucson. So we'll be right back in just a few short moments with Kent Stedman. You're listening to Night Search on KRVL 94.3 FM in Tucson. Hang on.